Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm Pat Johnston, and aren't you just loving waking up in the morning to these fine summer Michigan days being told you must stay inside because the air isn't breathable. Canadian wildfires are filling the skies and air with smoke and pollutants and particles. Oh, it's just so lovely this time of year. I saw radar maps showing how the smoke from these wildfires is actually moving towards Europe. I mean, it's insane. But please, 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 let's not have a discussion about climate change and how longer droughts and drier conditions are making wildfires more likely to burn bigger areas. No, let's not listen to those nerdy scientists with their fancy degrees telling us how there's such a thing as climate change. What do they know? Let's instead listen to the brilliant analysis by guys like Sean Hannity or Laura Ingraham or anyone else in the right-wing intelligentsia who haven't earned science degrees but play experts on TV. Or how about we just listen to some state Republicans who are complete experts when it comes to science, climate, and meteorology, like this guy, Republican State Representative David Preston of Cedar River, who just knew he could stand toe-to-toe with Democratic State Representative Lori Pahutsky of Livonia during a hearing over a package of Democratic bills that set a goal of being carbon-free in Michigan by 2035 and by creating a cleaner, more sustainable, and more cost-effective energy program. So listen to this exchange when Pahutsky says climate change played a crucial role in those ice storms, which knocked power out for thousands and thousands of Michiganders last winter. It's fascinating. Listen.
I think it is also important to point out that those ice storms were a consequence of climate change. And if we continue to do nothing to combat it, things are going to get worse. And you are absolutely right. I agree with you. People will die. So thank you.
Consequence of climate change is theory.
And
not science fact.
If I may, Madam Chair.
As a scientist, I strongly disagree.
As a youper, I strongly disagree.
You see, Representative Pahutsky has a degree in microbiology. I know. Some on the right believe that that's some just nerdy little piece of paper, some degree that they get from those liberal colleges. But she has spent more time in the science field than me and than many people. I mean, I walked away with my C+ in armchair chemistry, and that ended my science career. A Mr. Wizard, I was not. But I have to tell you, I have gotten into arguments with people like Representative Preston, and when they say something or give a retort like, "Well, I'm from the UP, so there." Well, that's when I either walk away or ask, "How about them Tigers?" Because there's no point in continuing a discussion with that. I mean, that's like talking to a fungo. Then there's Republican Congressman John James of Michigan's 10th Congressional District, who just hates the government so much he can't stop running to get a government position. Now, he tweeted a picture taken from the windshield of the car that he was in this week, and Congressman James wrote, "Can't see the next stoplight. Air pollution doesn't respect borders, and Americans are not dumb. China continues to permit 2 coal-fired power plants per week, and Canada continues to burn. But don't worry, if Biden bans gas stoves, wood-burning ovens, and forces EVs, somehow he's going to change the temperature of the earth." The arrogance. That's John James. I mean, this is what passes for smart thinking by the right wing. John James in that tweet says, or I think he's admitting, that Canadian wildfires are caused by climate change, but he says stay the course on more subsidies for oil and gas companies. That's insanity, and that's the makeup of today's Republican Party. People like John James don't want to do anything about climate change. I mean, James received over $81,000 from the oil and gas industry, according to Open Secrets. I mean, you think he's really going to cross his donors? I just have to say, if you ain't serious about climate change, then you're not fighting to stop the current system allowing climate change to continue. It's like Republicans saying that they're big anti-pharma people, but then they vote for big pharma by refusing to lower drug prices. But the Democratic state legislature is taking some strong steps, strong progressive steps, to fight against climate change while making Michigan more healthy and prosperous in the future. Darrell Slaughter, who's Michigan's clean energy advocate at the National Resources Defense Council, is standing by to talk more about that in just a moment. You know, last week I spoke with State Senator Stephanie Chang of Detroit on the podcast, and we talked about how Democrats were making moves to reverse the state's no stricter than federal law, which was passed by the Republican majority and Rick Snyder during the lame duck session of 2018. I mean, they knew how unpopular such a bill would be, which is why they passed it after the elections that year. The law stopped state regulators from setting stronger rules than those set by the federal government, which stopped us from enacting stronger environmental rules when needed. This is just me. I think it's probably important to have such leeway when dealing with PFAS in our water systems, for instance. But as we know, Rick Snyder and the Republicans don't have the best record when it comes to keeping the water clean. Anyway, Democrats passed the bill in the Senate last week, and this week they passed it in the House, and it's on its way to Governor Whitmer's desk. Republicans are crying that this will hurt business and investment, but I'm with Senator Chang on this one when I say, how is doing whatever we can to keep our citizens healthy and our environment healthy a bad thing? I mean, it seems like the best business strategy would be keeping people or customers alive and healthy, don't you think? By the way, I just had to say this. I thought Republicans were all for keeping power in the states or in the local government and to keep that pesky federal government out of our lives. I can't tell you how much I heard that mantra over and over again in right-wing talk radio. But you see, that sort of stuff was always a con. But it worked on millions and millions of people. But with Democrats in power, we're seeing some monumental changes when it comes to the state budget, which was passed here late Wednesday night, and it received enough Republican support to give it immediate effect. I'll go through more of the budget next week and in 2 weeks when I speak with Democratic State Representative Betsy Coffia. But I'd like to provide some quick highlights in this budget, the first time the budget has been passed by a Democratic majority since the early 80s. According to Paul Egan of the Detroit Free Press, the school aid budget increases K-12 per pupil grants by 5%. And it passed school meals for all. All right, that is great news. It's a $160 million program to provide free breakfast and lunches to all students from pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. Democratic lawmakers who pushed the program said making the meals universal with the help of federal funds will remove any stigma for students who receive them. Hear, hear. Now that is progress. State universities and community colleges are also getting a funding boost, which is important because, again, education is how we will start making this a place people and businesses will want to locate to, but we have to grow the talent. Bridge Magazine's Isabel Lohman and Hannah Dellinger report that the new K-12 budget sets aside $952 million in additional payments for districts with students deemed at risk. That is an increase of more than $200 million over what's set aside in this year's budget. Now, of course, there were some Republicans who voted against both the general budget and the education budget. For instance, Senator Jim Runstad of White Lake told Bridge Magazine that he believes there should be some means testing for who should qualify for free school meals, and he called the award of $125 million for electrical school buses a complete waste of money. Runstad also took issue with a $6 million appropriation for a diverse histories pilot, saying he worries the program will infuse a lot of indoctrination. Yes, kids, don't you dare be learning about American history. The general budget, by the way, also includes some big-time changes, including a $6.6 billion Michigan Department of Transportation budget with $1.95 billion distributed to local road agencies. And that's important because we know how much local roads really need the assistance. Like I said, I'll go through more of the budget next week, but this is a change that we were hoping for when Democrats got back into power, reinvesting in our state, our education, our environment, and our people. It's been a long time coming. These bills are designed to help people. They're designed to help us become a better state, a more welcoming and friendly state, a more enlightened state, and better yet, a more common sense state. Unlike Florida. I'll talk more about becoming a healthier and stronger state in the future by building a greener economy with my guest in just a moment. You are listening to LOL.
The Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
Of course, you can hear the podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. I assume that's what you're doing right now, but all podcasts are posted at leftoflansing.com. In addition, you can read some other thoughts and opinions I post throughout the week there as well. That's leftoflansing.com. Well, last week I was talking about environmental concerns and environmental justice with Democratic State Senator Stephanie Chang, who's been playing a key role in proposing and passing some bold environmental legislation. And legislative Democrats now are continuing to press for more bold and common sense policies to help protect Michigan's environment and to be a leader in charting a path to a greener, cleaner energy and economy here in our state. Joining me to discuss this more is Darrell Slaughter, who's Michigan's clean energy advocate at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Darrell, thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, can you just let everybody know what's the Natural Resources Defense Council all about?
Sure. So the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, we're an organization that works across the country and internationally to advanced protections, protecting our environmental resources. So that's in the energy space, in our water, our air, really active all across the country and, again, other parts of the world.
If you don't mind me asking, what made you get involved with the NRDC?
Yeah, so I actually have been involved in climate clean energy work for well over a decade. It started off as something I really picked up in college and, you know, really wanted to figure out a way to how to really make improve people's lives, particularly Black folks. That was something I was really focusing on and started to read more about climate change and the opportunities that are associated with transitioning our economy to a cleaner one. And now, again, over a decade ago, since then, I've had a variety of experiences working in the energy sector, working for our state regulator, the Michigan Public Service Commission, have done a few other projects related to climate and clean energy. And that's ultimately what led me to the work at NRDC. Has a great track record, great work, great advocates. And yeah, I've been in this role for growing on just under 3 years, but it's been a great ride.
Where'd you go to school?
Yep, went to Michigan State, so go green. I'm a proud Spartan there, but before, I'm originally from the Detroit area, but moved to the Lansing area to go to Michigan State.
Not to harp on this, but was there, because you said you kind of got really involved when it came to the environment, thanks to Michigan State University, was there a particular professor or professors that really opened your eyes to certain things?
Sure. Actually, it started, I transferred to Michigan State. I was originally going to school at Wayne State and had a professor down in that school, a gentleman named David Bullock. And, you know, I would ask him questions after class. It was actually more broadly on the social justice and, you know, those sorts of issues. And then over the course of having conversations and, again, discovering more about the work that's going on climate and clean energy, particularly read a book called The Green Collar Economy by Van Jones, who really sparked my interest in making a connection between the clean energy climate movement and particularly Black folks, because I think for a long time, I think folks thought of that type of work as being very privileged or very had a kind of a certain perspective there. But knowing that there's a real tangible, you know, way to talk about and work on these issues, especially on behalf of Black and brown folks. But that was, you know, once I made that connection, I was hooked in how important this work is and how much of a gap there. So
Darrell Slaughter with the NRDC is my guest here this week. Well, Democrats won the trifecta in state government last fall, and I know that had to be a relief for environmental advocates such as yourself, but it also, let's face it, put the spotlight on the pro-environmental side that it's time to really push for the changes that you've been pushing for many years. I'm assuming it was a welcome sight to know that you had allies in the state legislature. I mean, you always had allies in the state legislature, but they are now in charge to help you get some things done.
Absolutely. You know, just like all the other interest groups, we looked at the trifecta, and then obviously, just like everyone else, we were surprised that it actually happened, which is great there. But yeah, there's been a pent-up demand from our community to get some major things done to get Michigan moving in the right direction there, largely to build off a lot of the successes that we've had in advancing climate and clean energy policy in this state. We have a history of that, and I think we need to go even further. So yeah, we've looked at this as a great opportunity to push for some really bold policies. I know we're going to have a conversation about that here, but really excited and we're doing that work today.
Okay. Well, there is movement happening now as Democrats in the state legislature introduced a package of forward-thinking climate and energy bills that would in part establish 60% standard for renewable energy in Michigan's portfolio by 2030 and a 100% carbon-free target by 2035. That's pretty ambitious. Is it doable?
Let me say at the outset, these bold goals have, in some shape or form, have been already passed in other states across the country. You know, these are responsible policy. These are tried and true policies that have been in place in other states for quite some time, for several years now. Is it going to be easy? No, this is not going to be easy. It's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of pulling together the brilliant minds to figure out, you know, how best to reach these goals. But looking back to when we first passed, you know, renewable energy standards back in 2008, you know, that was just setting a 10% cap. And, you know, a lot of the arguments that were brought up then, like, you know, this is going to be really difficult. Renewables at that time were not cost competitive. All these types of arguments that were thrown out there, you know, fast forward years later, our utilities and have met that goal and have exceeded that goal. I mean, I say that to provide a little context for, yes, this is going to take some time in terms of reaching these goals. You know, the way that the goals have been laid out in terms of the legislation pieces that are out there, you know, it wouldn't be trying to meet these goals like tomorrow or in a few months. This builds up a time ramp up to help build up time to meet these goals. And so very confident that our state can lead and actually reach these goals. It's going to take some time, and it's going to take all of us in order to reach these goals.
Do you feel like the business community through the years has grown to at least in part accept this change to a cleaner energy environment and economy than they were, you know, maybe a decade ago?
I would say so. I don't want to speak on behalf of the business community, but this is from my conversations and hearing from folks who are members of the business community. That tune has, I think, has definitely changed. I think folks see the value of clean energy and having how their businesses are powered from clean energy sources. You will see major companies request that their power come from clean energy source or set company goals related to 100% clean energy there. So, yeah, I think from a evolution standpoint, I think the business community has there. In terms of working out the details and what it actually means, the brass tacks for them, they're an important stakeholder, and they should absolutely be part of this process of discussing what the, you know, what these bills finally look, or these laws absolutely look. But from what I've heard, they've embraced and beginning to embrace these policies.
Darrell, what are some other parts of this Democrat package that excites you and the NRDC as we are going forward here?
Sure. So outside of establishing this 100% clean energy standard and renewable energy standard, 60% renewable energy standard, making really crucial updates to our energy efficiency or energy waste reduction standards in our state. That's the minimum level of savings that our utilities have to meet on an annual basis. I mean, that comes in the form of when you get a you know, an email or a mailer in your mailbox from, like, for example, like Consumers Energy for like to do like energy audits or those sorts of things like that. Right now, increasing that from right now on the electric side, they have to meet 1% on an annual basis, but increasing that to 2% there. And then on the gas side, doubling that as well, going from 0.75% annual savings to 1.5%. And what that would mean for the pocketbooks of folks, that would mean that the utilities would have to work with folks to make their houses more efficient so they can ultimately save more money. They're not using as much energy. But the part I'm really excited about is that there would be minimum spending requirements for utilities to spend on low-income folks. Low-income folks oftentimes experience the brunt of not being able to, you know, afford their energy bills. And so there's some pieces in the energy waste reduction bill that would get some dedicated resources to their homes so they can control their energy uses and to begin to make their energy bills more affordable and more sustainable. So really excited about that. And another piece is the expansion of the Michigan Public Service Commission's authority. The Michigan Public Service Commission, the MPSC, is the state agency that regulates the investor-owned utilities like the Detroit Edisons and Consumers Energies of the world. And they play a huge role in our day-to-day lives in terms of the decisions they make. They make decisions related to whether a utility is going to use clean energy sources or fossil fuels, or, you know, holding utilities accountable for the outages that some of us across the state experience via the storm. storms that we had in March, those really bad storms. Because of past court decisions and the literal lettering of the law for the Public Service Commission, their ability to really be able to consider climate equity and affordability within their rulings on the various cases that comes before them related to rates and generation use is pretty limited. The bills that are out there, the legislation, pending legislation out there would expand that authority and actually direct the commission to address in each one of those cases goals related to climate, affordability, and equity. And again, cases that are deciding what rates to charge us, what's the generation usage in the future, so on and so forth. And so I think that's a huge win. As someone, I'm a former staffer at the Public Service Commission. I worked there for several years and understand there's some really hardworking people and we have some great commissioners right now, but want to give them a bit more authority and the opportunity to really be able to pass these goals or actually help elevate goals related to climate equity and affordability and really hold the utilities accountable. So there's a lot to be excited. I could talk about these bills all day, but I think they really would advance Michigan and put it on track to have a modern energy policy.
Just going back, because you were talking about energy waste and ways to cut back, I think I read somewhere that Michigan pays, is it the 12th highest rates of energy in the country?
It sounds about right. I mean, in terms of looking at rates there, we pay pretty high rates. And so, you know, that's actually another area to look for improvement. But at least in terms of, you know, your consumption of electricity, making sure having the utilities do all they can do to make sure your home is more the most energy efficient through their energy efficiency programs, being more aggressive there, that will help out there. But that's obviously, this bill package won't solve or address everything. There needs to be more work. But yes, very much aware of that, and there needs to be more work done.
Darrell Slaughter with the NRDC is on the podcast here this week. I read somewhere where Democratic State Representative Rachel Hood said that Michigan's large energy companies must start to begin, all right, the transition into energy managers rather than energy producers. Now, that's not going to happen overnight, obviously, but that is a long-term goal, correct?
As you're seeing the way how we're receiving our energy uses, like the energy system, it appears that it's trending that way, right? You know, I think at one point when we thought about the relationship between the utility and generation, that it was these huge plants that, you know, send energy or electricity to our homes so we can power our homes. Obviously, with technological advances, you know, rooftop solar, battery storage, you know, technologies like this, our energy systems are going to be a bit more decentralized and be more at the community level, at the neighborhood level. And that's, you know, that's a future that it looks pretty apparent. And that would potentially be a role for the utilities in terms of this kind of this manager there. But as you said, you know, nothing like that is going to happen overnight. But, you know, with these advances in technology, that certainly could be a possibility. That's where their role will be in the future.
I wanted to ask you real quick about, because I'm talking about what Democrats are doing, but there are some bipartisan efforts in our legislature too. And I saw somewhere where Democratic Senator Jeff Irwin and Republican Senator Ed McBroom, they reintroduced bills allowing for local communities to produce their own energy through solar energy projects. So I think I also read that it also requires that some 30% of the energy generated by a solar facility would go towards low-income families and low-income service organizations. I mean, I think that'd be pretty big as well.
Yeah, on that particular legislation, I have heard, I have not been working heavily on that or I've been tracking it. I know that there has been efforts to look at more opportunities for communities to take control of their energy usage in that way, possibly looking at municipalization of utility system. I mean, I think folks usually look to Lansing Board of Water and Light there. But yeah, that's kind of monitoring. I think some of this is a response to just folks wanting better service, better quality from your utilities there. So something definitely I'm keeping my eye on and monitoring, but we have not been actively working on that, but okay. Yeah, very much aware of that.
I suppose, and if you don't mind me, I'm just going to say this. I suppose what frustrates me the most, Darrell, is that we're already paying higher energy bills, as we talked about. Our energy grid has not been the most reliable in the state. As you mentioned, those ice storms from last winter, it just illustrated that. I guess what's frustrating for somebody who, you know, supports your side on this, how could anybody be advocating that we just keep with the current expensive and climate destroying energy system. That's something that just frustrates me. And I know it's got to frustrate you when you have to deal with opponents.
So a lot of the frustration is born out of, we are paying our hard earned dollars for this system. We operate under currently a monopoly system, which means that we can't really get service from anyone else. Like in other ways, you know, you go to the grocery store, if you don't like a particular product, you can easily move to a different product or go someplace else. But, you know, the fact that we are kind of stuck with who is providing our energy, and we feel like, and rightfully so, don't feel like we're getting our money's worth. And, you know, it's really disruptive to folks be able to live their lives and be able to do the things. It's incredibly frustrating there. And that's why you're probably seeing more efforts to look to municipalization, you know, there. I think, you know, more needs to be done to hold the utilities accountable. These aren't, for example, what we're presenting, won't solve everything. There's not like a silver bullet, but I think they're pieces to try to make our grid more reliable, make them more responsive instead of these lags in terms of, you know, you hear a bunch of folks having issues and sending complaints, for example, to the Public Service Commission, and there being like not that immediate change there. And so, yes, I think there needs to be a whole bunch of work in terms of expansion of policy and thinking more broadly. But yeah, I'll just leave it there. And I know there's a whole host of solutions out there.
Absolutely. I've asked other guests from other advocacy groups or industries a similar question. Mm-hmm. As you know, we've been dealing with the population and brain drain here in the state, especially with younger people. Is it your hope that by becoming a cleaner energy state, not only will we become a more attractive and affordable state for people, but I would have to believe that it'll also help by diversifying our economy, by growing the alternative energy sector?
Absolutely. I think there are so many benefits to our state really being leaders on transitioning our energy. And then not just energy sector, but, you know, looking at, there's other sectors we'll need to look at in our building sector, transportation sector there. But there's all sorts of benefits. And I know that it does add to our economy. I think I saw a report recently that I think in 2022, you know, 119,000 jobs associated with, you know, the clean energy economy there. So, I mean, you have that component to it. And as I said earlier, I mean, companies that are looking to relocate or the startup, I mean, I think the selling point that our state is progressive on addressing climate change and transition our energy system, I think that is a selling point. And I know for folks my age and younger, you know, these different generations, I know that's a huge, huge, huge thing for them. And it's a selling point to move there or to continue to start a life there. So I totally agree. And that's why, I mean, there's a million reasons for why this is a no-brainer. It makes just a lot of sense to move forward and pass these bills.
Rail and public transportation. Would you like to see more movement on that front as well?
Would love to. I grew up, I'm lifelong Michigander, but particularly grew up in the Detroit area and always was frustrated with the fact that we don't have a really comprehensive, sustainable transportation system. You know, when you go to other states and other places and you see that they have really well thought out, comprehensive public transportation options, you know, it makes you a little jealous and it makes you feel like, you know, why can't my state have something like that on tap? And, you know, I think that's also a selling point, especially for a young family or for young folks who are figuring out where to move to. I love my state. I'm lifelong Michigander, but I would not lie if I did not say I thought about some other places that, you know, had a lot of the things that, you know, the no-brainer things like having a sustainable transportation system. But, you know, I'm here to stay here and stay in the fight and hope to usher in at least some of that here in the state. But yeah, more work needs to be done there.
You've been in the fight for a long time when it comes to a lot of political issues or environmental issues or social issues. Since I've got you here, I was wondering if I could briefly just have you talk about your time with the Ingham County Board of Commissioners, where you served there as the vice chair. Is that correct?
I did vice chair of the entire board for a year and had several stints as chair of our Long Courts Committee.
What was your experience like working on that County Board of Commissioners? Because I've been covering some of the takeover of certain boards of commissioners by extremists over in Ottawa County and Livingston County, where they're passing resolutions declaring themselves constitutional counties where they believe they can just refuse to follow some state laws. It seems like you kind of had a different experience in Ingham County.
I had a totally different experience. Let me say it was one of the honors of my life to serve on the Board of Commissioners. It's one of the best bodies, one of the most thoughtful bodies that I've ever had the privilege of working with and being partnered with. And, you know, when I was there, you know, supermajority Dems, we had, when I was there, three Republicans there. And honestly, we would hash it out. You know, sometimes there would be some dividing lines by partisan issues. But for the vast majority of the resolutions and policies we made decisions on, very thoughtful conversations, you know, and sometimes the issues wouldn't be on strictly party lines. You know, it really restores faith to you in terms of, like, you know, we see national politics in some levels of state as well. A lot of the divisiveness and, you know, some of the hatred that's out there. But, you know, that board, that was, you know, especially during the pandemic and when there was a ton of things going on that I just wasn't happy with. And I know the world wasn't happy. I could always go to my colleagues against Dems, Republicans, you know, our big collective bag of folks. And we would talk about things and be really collaborative. And I think one of my proudest things that I worked on was, you know, we were the first county in the entire state to pass a resolution declaring racism as a public health crisis, which, you know, sounds like just some words and some things that put out there. But, you know, in addition to doing that and made some really profound statements in that resolution, the first of any, you know, again, any county government. But we also set up a whole task force to work on how to actually actualize those words. And so it wasn't just words on a page there. So one of the honors of my life, you know, it'll still be there, but just had to make a decision in terms of my capacity to be able to do everything. But yeah, amazing board, amazing folks that are still there today.
Yeah, I always say change happens faster. I always think with local politics than you could say, like with federal politics, for instance.
Yes.
Just one last question then. Do you think there is enough emphasis put on local politics? And do you think we could do more to accentuate the importance of serving on local county boards or city commissioners or school boards?
I don't think there's enough. I think we need more. I think folks still look to the national and, again, even some ways the state level politics for that's where the action is happening. That's where I can really make change in my community. I'm telling you, like at the county level or the city council level, I mean, that is where you can actually work directly with your constituents, actually write up a resolution or address something specific, get it passed with your colleagues, and actually go out to your community, your neighborhood, and actually point to, like, I actually helped solve that problem. You know, obviously, there's some steps along the way, but the steps or the connection between, like, the work that's done and, like, things actually happening, it's so much shorter. And I think people just need to start looking to a local government to get in there. I mean, I think they truly are where a lot of innovation happens. You know, I think a lot of innovative things happen at the local level and eventually become part of state and national policy. So, yeah, we'd love to see more folks serve in that capacity.
Darrell Slaughter, Michigan Clean Energy Advocate at the National Resources Defense Council. Thanks so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule here. And will you mind coming back on here in the near future as these environmental bills move through the legislature and hopefully to Governor Whitmer's desk here real soon?
Be more than happy to.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
I'm going to continue to concentrate on the environment and especially environmental justice when I speak with Charlotte Jamison, who is the Chief Policy Officer of the Michigan Environmental Council, next week. Time now for a Left of Lansing last call. This week, I'd like to focus on some more positive change that Democrats are bringing to the state and across the country, to be exact. We learned this week that Michigan is receiving $1.5 billion to help bring high-speed internet access to some 200,000 residents. According to Michigan Advance's Anna Gustafson, the money comes from the Federal Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, or better known as BEAD. Now, here's my favorite part of her story. Funding for BEAD comes from the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which Congress passed in 2021. That's when Democrats were in control. The legislation includes $65 billion to close the nation's digital divide that in Michigan especially impacts low-income households, older residents, and Black and Latino residents, according to a report from the State Department of Labor and Economic Opportunity. Bridge Magazine writes that as of 2021, 2021, more than 1.2 million homes in Michigan, that's roughly 31.5% of all households in the state, did not have fixed broadband connection at home. And that report came from the Michigan High Speed Internet Office. Again, the lack of broadband access is more likely to affect low-income households, seniors, and people of color here in our state. And Bridge Magazine reports that Luce County in the UP is the least covered county, with less than 40% of the county having high-speed internet access. That is amazing in today's time. According to Broadband Now, Michigan ranks 28th in the country in broadband states. Let me tell you, I don't think I'm the only one here to say that this is huge news for Michigan, which will benefit economically for both struggling families and for the entire state. I mean, this is an example of government helping people. But wait a second. Isn't this the same Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act that many congressional Republicans voted against back in 2021? Yes, it is. Former longtime Republican Congressman Fred Upton, who is now retired, was the only congressional Republican here in our state who voted for the bill. Just one. And he's no longer in Congress. The rest voted against it. Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville tweeted, and by the way, he has to be the dumbest senator in the history of the Senate, and that's saying something. This is what he tweeted this week. He said, "Broadband is vital for the success of our rural communities and for our entire economy. Great to see Alabama receive crucial funds to boost ongoing broadband efforts." I mean, he voted against it. He and most of his party voted against it. But now they want to take credit for some parts of it because it's helping his constituents. Look, we knew this would happen. We progressives knew this would happen. We knew Republicans would try to take credit for something that they voted against. Now, look, I'm not saying the infrastructure bill is perfect, but it has a lot of good in it. Common sense good for the overall common good. Most Republicans voted against it because there's a Democrat in the White House. That's it. That's the only reason why they voted against it. They knew it would help their constituents. They knew it would help the American people as a society, but they voted against it because a Democrat was in office. How lame, how cynical, how sick. Now, Republicans like my Congressman, John Molnar, voted against the infrastructure bill, and now some in his district will benefit because of it. Now, I'm not sure John Molnar will send out a press release celebrating the expansion of broadband services in his district, but you know what? It wouldn't surprise me. It will not surprise me one bit. Look, these right-wing Republicans seem to always be on the wrong side of history. They are rarely on the side of hard-working Michiganders and hard-working Americans, and they are hoping that you'll forget that. But you know better.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Left of Lansing. Thank you to my podcast voice, Jessica, for helping move the show along in exemplary fashion. Thank you to my good friend, Richard, for all of his efforts on making sure leftoflansing.com is up and operational. And thank you to Darrell Slaughter from the National Resources Defense Council on being my guest this week. I'll provide a link to the NRDC and all of my research on the episode post featuring this podcast on the website. I always post all of my show notes, just so you know I'm not making anything up, unlike the right wing. And I'd like to thank you for listening. I've always wanted to do a show providing the progressive side of the political spectrum, or, like I say, the common sense side of Michigan politics. As you've heard this week, thanks to the voters and thanks to so many great advocacy groups and activists, we are now seeing Democrats pass some real, powerful, progressive changes to help Michigan become a beacon of hope and prosperity in the future. Please do not hesitate to contact me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Have a happy, relaxing, and most of all, safe 4th of July holiday. Oh, and make sure you're not holding your phones while driving starting this weekend. It's against the law. Besides, just listen to all my podcasts. I can't think of anything else more entertaining than that. Remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.